Hello, everyone. Hopefully you're having and/or had a wonderful day today. If you're new here, welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. This is Beyond the Garment with me, your boy, your host, Drew Joyner. And today we have another guest interview. We have a really fantastic guest that I cannot wait for you guys to listen to. If you listened to last week's episode, you guys know that when it comes to these interviews, I try to ask questions that maybe you wouldn't expect. Like, there are a lot of like baseline questions that are maybe pretty obvious, like what inspires you, where do you get your style from, how do you pull from your style, etc., etc. But for today's guest, we have someone who obviously cares a lot about fashion, cares a lot about menswear, Clayton Chambers. But we have someone who is a master at developing thoughts in and around fashion and then putting those thoughts into written form so that people can digest them in the format of a newsletter. He has his own newsletter called Sprezza. Today's episode is going to focus on how Clayton has developed his newsletter, his blog, so per se. We're also going to talk about how social media has changed the landscape for how we digest fashion media. We'll talk about some menswear likes, dislikes, and it's not just about menswear, it's about womenswear, it's about fashion as a whole. So if you like more than just menswear, if you like streetwear, you like different of all these kind of fashion cores, we're going to talk a little bit about how fashion has changed in that regard as well. It's going to be a fun episode. Clayton is an awesome, awesome dude that I've known for quite some time, and I thought it would be great to have him on the show because I know that he's the type of person that brings unique and interesting opinions and commentary to the fashion space. Without further ado, let's get Clayton Chambers on the mic, or let's just roll the episode. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to be all prestigious. Let's just talk fashion. Good. Where are you in the world right now?
Nashville, Tennessee. So
Nashville.
Yeah, we've been here for about 2 years.
Interesting.
Last year we spent some time in Amsterdam. So we spent about 3 months there as a family. And that was that was such a fun trip to spend time over there.
Wow. Yeah. So you were with everyone there in Dutchland.
We were. Yeah. The first startup that I ever worked at full time was a Dutch company, and was fortunate for them to fly me over for work when I used to work with them. And that was the first time in my mid 20s that I'd ever been to Amsterdam. You have all the stigmas around Amsterdam and going there with drugs and red light district and all that stuff. But when you go over there, you realize the culture and what everyone sells you on is very different than what you end up experiencing in the local parts. And I don't know, it's just one of those places you travel to where you're this is just my speed. This is where I feel I want to spend some time. So I've always thought about it would be cool to spend some more time in that city. And so, last year we did that, and something I'll never forget. Maybe we might move back. I don't know.
Oh, wow. I had that much of an impression on you. You guys might move back.
Yeah. We talk about it. I think Europe in general, between places like Portugal or Amsterdam, pretty high on the list. So we'll see what happens. Trying to raise two kids right now, but I think it would be a fun life challenge with the family. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. The reason why I'm glad we're kind of talking about Amsterdam, because I've traveled there as well, and I spent a month there in 2022, which is crazy. It's 2 years ago now, almost exactly 2 years. We went in March of 2022, and the thing about Dutchland, Amsterdam, the Netherlands, is it's a total different societal lifestyle that you engage in compared to North America and in the US.
Yeah.
And from the moment you get there, you feel that shift, especially if you're not used to the most famous thing, which is traveling via bicycle. A lot of people in the US, they go to work on their bikes and stuff like that, but not a lot. Yep. You know what I mean? Not a lot of people do that. So getting used to getting everywhere without a car, which your bike is not your car. And then just the way people are in Amsterdam, it's a multicultural city. Yep. It's relatively safe. It has fashion elements. It has culture elements. It has transportation elements to other cities in Europe and other places, even in the Netherlands, Rotterdam and Den Haag and all these other places that are really, really cool. I love Amsterdam, honestly. And so like to hear, and a lot of, I feel like a lot of Americans when they go and visit Amsterdam, their experience is very similar, where it's like, man, it's nice here. It's actually really enjoyable here.
It's really,
So
yeah. Beautiful, beautiful place, man. Yeah. Shout out to Ten too, because he and I chilled a lot whenever I was living over there. I mean, I met him just going to St. John a bunch, and
oh
that man
my
is a that
goodness.
man is an evangelist for ALD. It's it's incredible, man. But such a nice dude, and it was really funny because I didn't know going in that you had kicked it with him a bunch when you were over there too.
Yeah.
And then he texted me. He was like, "Hey, I'm going to New York. I'm staying in Drew's spot. Like, we're gonna hang out, whatever."
Yep.
So, small world, man. Honestly, such a small world.
I love it, dude. I love it. For those who don't know, Toon Vandermeer, he is like an icon, a local legend of Amsterdam's coffee scene. He works at a very, very trendy, popular coffee shop called St. John, SJ for short. And he's been on the podcast before. He's been featured in a lot of my content. He's a good friend of mine, and it's cool to hear that you also know him as well. That's dope. I didn't know you ran into
two. Yeah, man, we chilled a lot. He was cool, and we did working on. I still haven't published it yet, but for Spreza, I was working on like an Amsterdam retail like shopping guide, and he sort of took me around to all the spots that he likes too. So he's tapped in, I would say, to the Amsterdam culture. But yeah, overall,
he really is.
Overall, good trip, and now we're back
cool.
here, man, chilling in Nashville. So that's home base.
Nashville. Nice. Beautiful. And you got your two kids now, your wife, we were talking about this before we started recording, but you're in full dad mode too, man, right?
Full on dad mode. Yeah, I got a 2-year-old, got newborn, and honestly just trying to balance like being invested in that while trying to stay ambitious and working and also not get too wrapped up in work and try to enjoy life at the same time. So I don't know. All that stuff's top of mind. It's weird having kids that age. Like having kids reframes a lot of like what you consider to be important. And there's a lot of stuff that I probably consider to be pretty important. And then I had kids, and I was like, shit, this actually doesn't matter as much as I probably thought it did. So a lot is changing right now in my life, but all good things overall. I feel like.
Can we dig in on that a little bit?
Sure.
I'm curious. Like, what are some of the things that are top of mind that, you know, before you had kids, because I think it's an important question for anyone, especially any creative individual or any person in this kind of like world that we're in, and like coming of age stories of like everyone imagines themselves as this young entity, and then you grow up and then you have family and you have these kids. It's not for everyone, obviously, but you know, if it's for a lot of people, what's changed for you, man, in terms of just like your priorities? Because it seems like everyone has this kind of like feeling when, you know, when their children are born, that like things change for them. And I'm curious to know what changed for you.
Such a like a loaded question, but everything, like honestly, everything. I think relationally, the way you like value certain friendships changes, and your perception of like time and how you allocate time, it totally shifts, because you realize it's such a scarcity to, you know, to have time on your hands. And so like your focus becomes on like making like every minute count, as opposed to being like, I'll just like get to this thing later, or like I'll do it next week or whatever. And all of a sudden, like when you know you have a finite amount of time because you have other obligations and responsibilities, that just reframes how you look at it. One thing I think having kids has done for me is like helped me reconnect probably spiritually. You know, I wouldn't consider myself like religious in maybe like the traditional, you know, Western Christian sense, but like I would say I feel very spiritually connected. And I think having kids has helped shape that too, because you go through like this experience of watching someone be born into the world, and it's almost like they're exiting one portal and like entering a new one. This is getting really philosophical, but they're exiting one place and entering another, and your job as the like caretaker is to literally help them navigate into the world and then like be in charge of helping raise them and taking care of them, make sure they feel safe. And I think that it's like a trippy feeling, and it's something you can probably only understand once you like experience it yourself. But yeah, those are some things for sure. And then, yeah, like I think just the need to be liked and feel cool and be part of rat races and hang out in certain pockets or circles, like all that stuff matters a lot less to me now.
Yeah,
when
for
I felt
sure.
super wrapped up, you know, in it in my 20s. So yeah, those are some main things I would say that's changed for me.
Really profound, honestly, really, really profound. And it's, I don't know, for me, I asked the question with the most intense level of curiosity, because I know at some point, I think for me, I would love to have kids. I would love to have one, two kids in my life that I can help raise and become, you know, some cool little kids, right? I mean, some cool adults. I think it's a very natural thing, of course. So interesting, very, very cool stuff. Let's maybe start to get into the pod, man. I mean, I think we've done a little bit of like nice little nonchalant introductioning, but I want to start to kind of dial in more who you are, why you're here, for people who don't know. I'll just start with the question of, if you could, can you give us a little introduction, your name and what you do?
Yes. Yeah, I'm Clayton Chambers, and founder of Sprezza. It's a menswear newsletter that explores style at large, and something I've been working on for a few years now. And I've always more or less been in the clothing and fashion world. Went to school in New York City, studied for 4 years there, and really kind of cut my teeth into clothing and fashion there. That was like my first real introduction into that world. And so I think I've always loved clothes since I was a kid. But, you know, my curiosity got piqued when I moved to the city. And I feel like I've kind of been part of that ever since. And so I started Sprezza a couple of years ago. It was just a side project to explore kind of the changing dynamics of style, right? Like you live, and we could talk a lot about this, but like, you know, you sort of live through like the print age of like GQ and Esquire and like magazines. And then all of a sudden like the internet boom happens. And then you hit the sort of Tumblr WordPress era, right? Where blogs are popping off, and streetwear blogs, especially like High Snob or Hypebeast. And like, and that, you know, gives way to the early social era of like Instagram and then later on TikTok, right? And so like so much has changed. I think I started Sprezza at a time when people were probably a little bit disillusioned with social content and influencers especially. And so, you know, my focus with Sprezza has always been to launch it as a newsletter first. So it's like email first. It feels more or less like a treat to get something in your inbox than to like constantly be scrolling on your newsfeed for something. And so, yeah, that's what I've been up to.
Yeah. Dope, man. I love that introduction. That was perfect. I think kind of piggybacking on this idea of what you recently, like the most recent comment you made, which is about starting a newsletter and like the difference between you searching for content and content finding you, because you put yourself in position to be in a sphere of a particular influence. That is something that's like really interesting to me. Email lists are things that are really interesting to me, because as a creator who obviously has an audience, like I don't necessarily control the space where I create my content, right? Instagram, Facebook, Meta, they control the platform. YouTube, Google, they control the platform. TikTok, ByteDance, they control the platform. So I'm subject to whatever changes, whatever shifts happened. But with email, with newslettering, with websites, with personal kind of control of the narrative, these kind of spaces, you control every bit, from the visual element to the content that goes on them, everything that's involved, you control every element. And so like I'm excited to talk about, you know, the journey of how you went from guy who's into fashion starting Sprezza, and maybe let's peel back this onion a little bit. I want to kind of go. Yeah, go ahead. Actually, if you have thoughts in your head, go.
Yeah,
go.
I mean, for me, that it dates back to kind of early days of growing up. So I grew up in the South, from Tennessee originally, and mainly grew up in Florida. I'm one of eight kids, and I grew up in a Christian home. So my dad was a pastor, Southern Baptist preacher, and we went to church every Sunday. And for me, like the earliest memories of clothes were always tied first to like my mom. She would dress us for church every Sunday in like matching overall outfits, or she was She was like a master seamstress, and so she knew how to
Sunday's best,
she knew
baby.
how to get
Sunday's
us she knew
best.
how to get us putting on in our Sunday's best. And yeah, the uniform for me every Sunday, man, was Oxford shirt, navy blazer, button down, standard kind of preppy tie, some khakis, and some penny loafers, and wore that every Sunday basically growing up. And I think that left a big impression on me in terms of like having a uniform and owning a certain style or aesthetic. And then my other core memory, I feel like growing up, was my dad. We grew up pretty poor, but like my dad would go shopping one time a year basically, and it was always on January 1st when like Dillard's and JCPenney would throw up the like New Year's sales at like 80% off, and he would haul us into the car, and we'd just run around, and he'd pick up a couple suits once a year. And like those two memories for me were always like the closest in terms of clothing. My mom taught us how to sew and tailor growing up, and so learned how to understand fit and like shape and silhouette a little bit better. And then when I went to New York City, like I grew up like in a really small town. I grew up in like a cattle farming town in Florida, so like zero access to culture, zero access to kind of early streetwear, hip hop, or punk scenes and that kind of stuff that were popping at the time. But when I moved to New York, that was like my first real in like just sort of introduction and ingestion of like culture. And I'll never forget just like riding the subway and just like seeing all the different styles, like an 18-year-old kid who like literally never left like the South, basically never really traveled much, and like being in the city riding the subway and like experiencing that for the first time as like a freshman in college. And I wanted more. I wanted to experience clothing and understand it better. And so for me, like I was super fortunate early on to get, to get in the door at places like Michael Kors and Barney's New York. And I think for me, the most meaningful experience was like working on the buying side as an intern for a while at Barney's, specifically on the men's sportswear side, like buying the luxury stuff from like Givenchy or YSL. Or I was there when they were like early on carrying Virgil stuff with Off-White, like that little era, a moment
Wow.
of time. And my bosses were just like master buyers who knew everybody like in the business. And that like that really shaped me, like luxury fashion especially shaped me. And so I started a blog when I was in college called Brothers in Craft. That's now RIP'd. But that was also a really cool experience because I got to be part of that early inflection wave of like Tumblr, WordPress stuff, like Instagram. We were like one of the first few million accounts on it. And like IG used to pump our like account on the discovery page, and we like grew our IG following. I worked on the blog with my brothers and like ran that for a while, but got to work with cool brands, got to go to trade shows, fashion show stuff. And so for me, I like lived through the early influencer era and got pretty burnt out. And so kind of made some career decisions to shift away from it. And then during COVID, I was kind of between, one job to another, and was just looking for a creative outlet to go back to clothing, because I felt like I missed it a lot. And that's when I started Sprezen. So that's a little rundown on my
amazing.
Experience with clothing.
I love it, man. I love it. I'm curious to know, because we're going to touch on Sprezza a ton, but you dropped a lot of little seeds for us to pick up and collect and evaluate what is this true story? Because, it seems like from what I'm understanding, and I love kind of recounting things, it seems like, you were this young whippersnapper in Florida, and you come to New York City and your eyes get bigger and bigger and bigger. Right. And you start to see fashion in a totally new lens, even though you had experienced fashion. Your mom had taught you sewing. You went to church weekly. You experienced the level of fashion. Right. But there's a different kind of energy and speed about being in New York City, something that I've experienced living here over the last five months, something that if you've ever visited the city, you experience. And so as you're in school, you're interning, you're gaining skills, you're networking, you're doing all the things college kids do, which I think is an awesome thing. I think it's an awesome opportunity that you have the opportunity to go to school, because I think people will ask this question a lot. Is it worth going to school for fashion? Is it worth doing these kind of things? And to that, I say it depends, but I would lean more to yes, because the resources that you get, that you have access to in school, will far outweigh you being a solo individual trying to make it in the world. So it seems like you were able to take advantage of those resources.
Absolutely.
The question I want to ask you is about writing in particular and blogging, because it seems like you had some cool experiences, you know, with luxury, with sportswear, those kind of things. But blogging is something that, like, it's a separate entity from obviously the tasks you do. I don't know, maybe it's not a separate entity from the tasks you did at your job. But like, why did you get into writing and kind of creating your own opinions about, you know, on your blog? Why did you start your blog? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, writing has always been a core way for me to communicate, and like I can talk all day, obviously, but like I never felt like with video or even like audio and podcasting, thinking about the different mediums of how you share information, that like those were best suited to me. And I've always leaned into that. Some of that's changed because I make some short form video content now, but yeah, writing for me has always been the core pillar of like how I communicate best. Part of my mind is like pretty philosophical in nature. So like I love the way that I can like write as a way of sharing information and educating people on stuff. And it helps me also understand better things better too when I write. And so that was sort of the reasoning for going the blog and newsletter route. Again, like just kind of being burnt out from like the mid to late 20 teens of like social content and IG and TikTok and the rise there, like people just seemed pretty disillusioned at the time with like digesting content through like algorithms and like news feeds and stuff. And it's still obviously a huge part of what we do now, but I was just noticing this like interest in people wanting to digest in the form of a newsletter, like having a thing that like enters your inbox where you're just like, I'm gonna sit down and like read the morning paper or like drink my coffee while I scroll through and stuff. And a lot of the people kind of early on in my newsletter community were like, you know, busy professionals and stuff too. So they sort of saw me as like the curator of information, right? Keeping them dialed into like what's happening and synthesizing or condensing information, explaining complex things in simple ways. And so I've tried to assume that role, I think, with the newsletter early on, and some of that's changed now, but for me, yeah, writing is just, it's like my way to communicate. So that's why I love it so much.
I think that's really important. That's weird to say. I think it's really cool, first and foremost, that writing is your way of communicating, because in a world that seems to be obsessed with video content and or visual content, writing is like, I don't know, people tend to forget about writing, right? Everyone wants to become a creator that talks about things or creates visual elements. But writing is something that is as old as time itself, it seems like, right? And it becomes, and it has become kind of this like very specialized way to communicate things. Obviously, writing happens all the time, but like people don't understand the level of kind of intentionality it takes to write something, and to write something really well, to write something creative, thought-provoking, funny. And what also people don't understand is that a lot of times videos require writing. Videos and creating collections and mood boards, it requires the ability to communicate through the written form. I think writing is one of the most important skills anyone can kind of undertake and try to learn. And so it's cool that it's always been something that for you has been your way of communicating. Now, like, I want to poke at this a little bit more. Like, so you have seven other siblings, right?
Yeah. Yep. One of eight kids.
Seven.
So I got six older brothers. One of eight kids. Six older brothers, one younger sister.
Six. Wow. That's crazy. That's crazy. That's a cool family dynamic. Very interesting family dynamic. Do you think that, I mean, I don't know, I'm kind of poking at this idea of like where this inclination to write came from for you. Do you think there's anything that happened or any reason that comes from childhood, that comes from sibling, being a sibling, comes from your upbringing that makes you more inclined to write versus some of these other things? Or is it just all about like intrinsic, like what's inside of you? Like that made you write, or like I'm asking the question of nature versus nurture.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Think it falls probably more into the nature side. I would say most people in my family are also good communicators through writing too. So my dad was a really good writer, my mom as well, and so I think it's just intrinsic. And the more I've done it, that was also my competitive advantage. I felt like, because I was really bad at math or like anything technical or analytical, and so like my my area to compete in was like through writing. And so ideally, like, that's what I've pushed a lot of people to. Whether you make video content or content of any kind, like focusing on writing as a discipline, like it helps create clarity in your mind, helps you be able to like express better, not only like how you feel, but like what you want to say.
Yep. Totally. Makes sense. It makes sense. And you're so right about the element of writing to create, because I'll tell you, every piece of content that I come out with has some level of written direction for that piece of content, whether it be, this is the hook. Yeah. I write out the hook 8-12 times, or this is what I'm going to say in this moment, or this is the kind of idea I want to encapsulate. Short form, long form, there's a level of writing, right? That's how, at least for me, like, that's how I stay cohesive. It's very difficult to do what we're doing right now, which is talking off the cusp. Like, it requires practice. Yeah. It requires understanding cadence and all these things. And like, it's very natural. That's why people like podcasts, because it's very raw. Like, I can't anticipate what you're going to say, what I'm going to say, and what I'm going to think. So you're kind of thinking on the spot. Writing takes away the ability to have to think on the spot, which is why I love it.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
What does Spreza mean? Let's talk about Spreza. Where'd you get the
Spreza,
name from?
Spreza is part of like a longer Italian word, sprezzatura, or sprezzatura if you're American. It's a word that
I am American.
Definitely American. I would not say it the Italian way. I don't know if you saw the Nolan White did a fun little video the other day. I'm like pronouncing brand names. And how you pretend like you're going to, you know, some coffee shop, you know, in New York City, and you're like, I would like an almond croissant. And it's like, croissant. Like, bro, we're not in France, number one, and number two, you're not French, so like, don't pronounce things that way, unless you actually speak the language, which is kind of funny. But yes, sprezzatura is really just translates to this idea of doing things with ease. It's like called studied carelessness, or like to move about your day, or to do things with a nonchalantness, with an ease. And I just always liked that. I always liked that description, and I always liked that word. And so when I was trying to think about a name for the newsletter, I was like, Spreza. It feels like it matches the vibe of what I wanted to do. And I think sprezzatura is also an important word, like in Italian fashion too, when you think about the way that Italian people dress, especially from a tailoring perspective. If you've ever been a, you know, Pitti Uomo, you see a lot of like older Italian men who come from these, you know, tailoring shops, ateliers, fabric mills. Like, they've been in the game for so long, they've like studied the art of clothing and shape and fit to a level where they like, they can just throw shit on and it doesn't really matter. They look so good in it, and the way it fits looks so good. And like, for me, that's always been like my North Star with style, is to dress in a way that feels nonchalant. It feels easy. It feels careless and free.
Totally. I love that. And these dudes at Pitti, man, they really got that shit on, for lack of my better French. They really, really do a good job of styling. And I don't know. I'm more turned on to things like Pitti and menswear, and just, I've been more encapsulated in that side of things versus, I would say in the past, I was more of a streetwear, more of a, and I still think I am, like, more of a trendy or very niche kind of brand kind of guy. I would still say I am those things, but I think I'm expanding to more menswear as well. And it's cool to have resources like Spreza as a way to learn about these things. Let me ask you, you know, because I think there's still someone who's like listening, who's like, wait, what is it again? Can you give us a rundown of like the topics, the types of things that people can expect when they sign up for Spreza, or like what you're trying to create with Spreza?
Yeah. So for Spreza, I just call it a newsletter that explores men's style. And I think the core theme behind Spreza is to merge past, present, and future together. So like, the way we dress now obviously has been informed by, or the way that we're dressing now, or how we'll dress in the future, is informed by the past, like all the good stuff. Like, if you look at most menswear garments, like, more often than not, they're repurposed military garments, right? Bomber jackets and pea coats and trench coats and t-shirts, and like the list goes on and on, right? Like, so the past very much informs the present and the future. And so I try to create content from that angle and that lens of like showing you why things are the way they are. I think there's really three pillars that I focus on with the content. So like the first would just be like curation. So trying to curate better information for you. I'm not going to show you like flash sales and like cheap shit and, you know, fast, trendy fashion stuff. There's a little bit of like trend talk, but the idea is to curate better stuff for you, not more stuff. The second is education, which is like diving into bigger topics, like why the North Face is a cultural staple, or how Carhartt Whip became essentially a streetwear line out of the brand Carhartt, right? Or digging into some of those like bigger themes and stories that again influence like the zeitgeist and like the cultural connection that we have to clothing and fashion and art and music and hip hop, like how those things are all informed by brands from the past. Yeah. And then the third is just discovery. So like I'm traveling to London, I put together a good shopping list. Here are my 15 places that I would love to shop from. Or like I'd have a really cool kind of like editorial series going where I have my friend Chris Benamore who shoots stuff in New York, and when I'm in different cities, I'll do brand features or feature people who I think have good taste and style, and sit yeah. down and ask them questions about their life. And I think I'll have to get you on the next run of the next batch of interviews. But those are kind of the three pillars. It's like curation, discovery, and education around men's style.
I love that. I love how much clarity you have with what you're doing. It's actually very, very powerful to be able to talk to someone who has such level of clarity mm-hmm. about the projects that they're working on. It just speaks volumes to how seriously you take it as well. And I would love to be on. Thanks, you man. Flatter me. I would love to be on, dude. I think it's really amazing what you have going on. And I think because there is so much information out there, the world needs more curators. I mean, in the sense that if you're a young person mm-hmm. or an older person or someone who's getting into fashion or have always been into fashion, because I think there's a switch that takes place. And that switch is like you can be into fashion, menswear, streetwear, sneakers, footwear, leather goods, whatever it may be. And you might do it passively. But if you want to start doing it actively, and you already work in a profession that takes up a lot of your time, maybe you don't necessarily have the time to do all the research yourself. So you have to lean and rely on trusted yep. sources. You have to lean on people and individuals who not only you like their recommendation, but you like their essence as human yep. beings. You like what they stand for, how they move through the world, things like that. And it seems like, you know, and I've always been like kind of like passively looking at what Spreza has done. Ever since, I can't remember when we connected exactly, but ever since we connected, and it's always important for me, someone who also has a relative platform who talks about a lot of things as well, to like pull from resources, pull from Spreza yeah. articles, pull from things that I've read from reliable sources, and kind of also tell the story of things. In addition to that, man, I think one of the more difficult things to do is to use words to encapsulate culture, because culture yeah. is this like intangible, always moving, always something that when you look back on it, like on a hindsight standpoint, you can see it, but in the moment, it's like a little foggy. Mm. It's a little bit like, maybe it goes this way, but maybe it veers that way. Do you find it difficult? Or actually, no. Let's not. I think I'll leave that statement at yeah. that. I guess I want to ask you. Talk to me about like the difference between some of your first Spreza articles, and the difference between what you're writing about now, or maybe even like the difference between your blog that you had in college versus Spreza, because it seems mm-hmm. like you talked about this shift that took place with media, social media, early influencers, to now I feel like we're in a total different era. And I kind of mm-hmm. want to hear you kind of explain the difference between those two again.
Yeah. I think with the early blog stuff in the WordPress and more Tumblr days, there's probably just like this curiosity and like innocence and maybe like naiveness around content, like Styleform days, Tumblr days, WordPress, like the blogging era was a fun time to be on the internet. It really was, because people got to find like little pockets of the internet to like find things that they were passionate about, right? And for me, like that was a fun time to create content. So like a lot of the content I focused on with Brothers in Craft, that like early WordPress blog, was DIY stuff, sourcing vintage. You go to a Goodwill and find a, you know, $20 suit, you go home and, you know, tailor it to like your body proportion so it fits better, right? Like that kind of stuff. And I think people like that. Then like through the 20 teens, we saw just a lot of like proliferation of streetwear, and then the luxury markets adoption of streetwear as a style genre to like poach off of, and a lot of just commoditizing of styles and subcultures. And I think that's when it really started to like pick up. And what I'd say with Sprezza now is that like I'm trying to use the content as a vehicle to return people back to this like newfound love for clothing or for style or for like understanding style in their own way, and to create moments and opportunities and ways to connect, whether it's through me hosting events in person or posting weekly articles, or I have a Sprezza group chat that's just for email subscribers only. Like if you read the newsletter, you get to be part of it. And just trying to create and cultivate conversations that feel fun, that make the internet feel fun and less convoluted and fucked up and transactional, I would say. So trying to restore meaning and connection back to that in the form of clothing.
What would you say the internet is? The internet a worse place than what you think it was 5-10 years ago? Is it worse than what it was, or is that too weird of a question?
I think that we're all just smarter. Like we have like our sixth sense at more like a fever pitch at all times with the internet. Like it's easier for us to see through BS and to like pick out when someone feels authentic or not. It's easy to know what feels phoned in versus what feels genuine or sincere. And what I'd say is, yeah, like there's still parts of the internet that feel like really dark. And I'm sure you deal with a lot of this, right? Like in the comments and the DMs, and you make any kind of content, you just get trolls who just slide in and try to like beat you down with whatever their negative energy is, and whatever they're dealing with, they just project it on you. And it's like, there's that. But at the same time, there's also, I've met so many cool people on the internet and have been able to forge a lot of cool friendships and relationships with people literally around the world, just because I put stuff on the internet and like create content. So I would say, there's still always that opportunity to, Tan, exactly. That's like, I met him in person actually, but I've kind of cultivated that through online as well. So that's how I feel about it.
And when it comes to trolls and things like that, is that less of an issue with newslettering, you would say? Or I mean, most people who are there, they're there because they want to be there, right?
Yeah, it's probably less of an issue than like making short form video. But I still get people who come in and try to say weird stuff, and I just delete their comment or block them. I deal with it more now, like on the video side. Like if I have a video that goes viral, and it's like clockwork, you know, when somebody's coming in, right? Because when you just add that distribution, like the sample size of like how many people it's reaching, like you just know you're going to get a percent of negativity. And I don't know. I mean, do you feel that way with your content?
I mean, I would agree with you wholeheartedly in that. Like, I think there's a rule for virality. If you go viral, or if you have videos that consistently go viral, whatever it may be, there's going to be a subset of the population, of the audience, that's just going to hate the video that you make. Not just hate, but like they're just going to poke at the minute, the random, they're going to try to kind of tear the video down in a sense, in some way, or make a joke out of it, or make you the butt of it. Something is going to happen. That's just almost like the law of social media. Like you could just make it a whole law. Every person who's ever gone viral has experienced at some level someone, you know, saying something because of a viral video. But what I found, which is a really cool thing, is that, well, of course that happens. It has not deterred me in any way. In fact, it's motivated me. even more to continue to bring education, like you said, to bring inspiration and to bring thought-provoking conversation in and around fashion. That is kind of what motivates me. And so, like, I think it's actually in a lot of ways, it's a good thing that there are people who are incredibly thoughtful and incredibly insightful with their comments. And I think that it's a good way that there's people who are not, because no matter what, if you read that comment as an audience member or as a creator yourself, it's going to make you think about how you want to proceed. Yeah. And obviously, if things are totally destructive, it's not going to be helpful. If someone's racist, bigot, or, you know, something just totally harmful, then obviously it's not. But like, if they're pointing out something like, well, that's dumb, like, I would just buy a cheaper one, like something like that, you know what I mean? Like something of the sort. I think it's still an important conversation to have, because at the end of the day, like, that individual is, they're logically thinking about why they wouldn't engage in a certain way, right? As long as there's logic there, that's what's important.
Yeah, I saw that.
But yeah, man, cool. It's interesting. I think, you know, for Spreza, for you, it's interesting to hear you kind of, like I said, elaborate on why it seems like you've enjoyed doing what you've been doing over the last, how many years has it been for Spreza?
Probably like 2.5 years, 3 years maybe. So,
2.5 years?
Yeah, and I would say I'm just like, just now starting to like find my own voice with the content and communicate and create stuff in a way that feels like true to the vibe or the energy I want to give off and the stuff that I want to say. And yeah, I think it's been fun. Like, I think looking back 2 years ago, I remember being in that spot early on being like, damn, like when am I going to hit that spot where I really feel comfortable in my own skin creating stuff? And I think that's part of the game of like creating anything, whether it's like a piece of art or music or writing a blog or communicating through video or writing a book, like whatever it is, like the amount of reps you put in to get to a point where you start to feel comfortable in your own skin, it takes so many. And 99% of people like quit before you hit that point. And I think it feels like, it just feels like fun right now, because I'm finally hitting a stage where it feels like people get what you're about and you're rewarded with like the growth of that for being consistent.
Totally. I totally agree too. It takes a moment to find your voice, and you're always constantly refining your voice. So no matter where you're at, you're going to look back, and I've looked back many of times.
Yeah.
A month ago, 2 months ago, a day ago, 6 months ago, a year ago, and you go, I wouldn't do it the same way now. I would slightly tweak it. And that's just the way it goes with anything creative, with anything that, you know, you have to, you personally put your stamp of approval on from an output standpoint. So, lovely, man. I only wish the best for what you continue to do.
Thank you, man.
Hopefully more people will open their eyes to kind of the content, the written content, the newsletter format that you're creating with Spreza. And, I'm excited to see you continue to kind of evolve the content as you continue to grow as a man, as a father, as someone who's growing up in the world, and obviously like a part of a generation who obviously understands the fullness of social and fashion and culture. So
thank you, my man.
There's that.
I appreciate that.
Let's talk a little bit about your, like, what's exciting for fashion to you? Like, you know, that's the more like businessy, not even that kind of businessy, but like that's the more like stuff. But like, what about like right now for you? Like, what is personally exciting for you in the fashion world? Is there any type of brands or just moments that you're excited about, products that you're excited about, anything like that?
Yeah, I think from a content perspective, what I'm excited about is having just like a new wave of creators who are serving the populations with just good, thoughtful, educational content. Like, you're an example of it. Someone like Nolan is an example of that. And it's what I'm certainly trying to do as well, right? Is just be like an educational resource to help people dig deeper into clothing and niches and genres and subgenres. So I think that's really exciting. From a, like a brand and product, or maybe just like a trend perspective, like something I think that I've been observing for years now that is really starting to like hit a fun stride is it's just what I call like the genrelessness of menswear in general. And it felt like if you look at the different style eras from like 90s American yuppie sportswear to 2000s in like raw denim and Red Wing boots, Americana, to like streetwear and the rise of streetwear in a more like mainstream way, not like the subculture era of that, but like actually in a mainstream way through the 20 teens. And then now it's like, what are we in? Like, what the hell are we in from a styles perspective? Everything. Like, it feels like every genre is merging and mixing and matching. I think an interesting like manifestation of that is through GORP and like a lot of what the GORP stuff has pushed us into now, that like you can wear an ARC jacket with like some vintage Levi's and some, you know, Norda trail running shoes, or like a pair of Blundstones, right? Like those are different styles. Or you can mix and match tailored clothing with vintage pieces, or sneaker with this thing or that thing. And I think just the genrelessness of how we identify through clothing is something that we haven't quite seen. And so I just love that, because it shows that like there's space to express yourself fully through all the different things that you like, right? Because most of us have a wide range of interests and things that we appreciate and like. And so that's something that's been fun to watch.
Definitely. I love that myself too. I think it's one of the key elements that is continuing to make fashion really fun for me, is like that, you know, there's so much range that you can dress yourself with. There's so many interests you can pull from.
Yeah.
And I like the importance of pulling from things that you are truly interested in. So I'll flip that back on you. What are some of the genres or the words that you would describe your style as? Because I think you're someone who obviously has a high fashion and style acumen. What are some of the things that like you like to wear?
Yeah, I've heard the menswear goat Aaron Levine talk a lot about this, but I like clothing as it relates to this idea of creating tension, right? Like having two competing pieces in your wardrobe. And I think I've dabbled in like different uniforms or genres over the years, and you buy things when they feel on trend. And I think what I'm actually settling into now is like this idea of like wearing pieces that like somehow complement each other by like going against each other, right? Like wearing some black stock and Weber loafers with a pair of Levi's jeans, right? Or like a technical piece of outerwear, like a rain jacket and some pleated trousers, right? Like when you compete with different genres and styles, like that for me is where I also sit into. I think in terms of actual subgenres, like I'm obviously most inspired by prep and like American prep. So like Ralph, still like no matter how much new shit gets created and put out, like I still love Ralph and the world that he built around clothing. And like that's the sort of ultimate peak of menswear to me for style and taste. And it's even evident in how like you look at a brand like ALD and how everyone puts them on the holy grail for what they've done, and you realize it's just like ultimately Ralph inspiration, and then even before that it's like Brooks Brothers inspiration. So it's like for me that's how I would describe my style, is like Aaron says it, like creating tension with your pieces.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
I think I've heard that idea before as well. I've kind of heard it in different ways, almost like mixing high with low, if you want to even call it that, if you want to call something low, mixing things that, yeah, create tension. That's a really, really
Tyler,
cool
the creator
thing.
Does that really well.
And I use that myself.
Like, I think he's the perfect example. Like just go look at him on Pinterest or IG or wherever you follow his stuff, and like everything he wears somehow like is a paradox, but it works, and he pulls it off well, better than most people.
Totally. Yeah, it's funny, the second episode in the row mentioning Tyler, because last week I had Jason Jules on, one of the creators, the author of Black Ivy. Yep. And he had the opportunity to talk with Tyler and meet with Tyler, and he created Black Ivy.
Yep.
The visual kind of diary for, like, he had Tyler the creator in mind, right? Like he wanted Tyler to at some point to read or not just read but observe and absorb this book. And so to bring up Tyler again, who's someone who's a huge style influence of mine, I think I love that. And also, I love Ralph. I mean, we have very similar tastes in that, in that regard. I was going to ask you, with ALD, I don't know, you were in New York in November, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So you're back in New York in November. I missed your event. I apologize.
It's all good, man.
There was something that came up. I told you I was going to come, and then I totally biffed. But just, I'm finding out how hard it is to actually make a plan with someone in New York. In this time of my life, like, I have, the amount of times where I said I'm going to be there and not shown up has exponentially increased, which I feel incredibly bad about. I used to be show up 5 minutes early kind of guy.
New York will do it to you, man. Makes you just be protective over your time, or reclusive, like you don't want to see anybody. So I get it.
Yeah. This is the question I wanted to ask you. Have you been to ALD recently? That's the first question.
I have. Yep. I've been to, well, last spring I hit the London location because I hadn't been to that one since they'd opened into it. It's in like Soho Mayfair area. That was a really well done space. And then, I just went to, when I was there in November, just popped in to the new spot, which is a lot like, if you know the old, not the old ALD location, but like the like second version that they did, it was very like wide and you had the little skinny cafe at the end. This one goes like all the way back. It's like super deep. There's like four different layers to it. So yeah, was super impressed with how it looks.
I mean, I think they do a great job. ALD does a great job with a lot of things. Their storefronts are really cool. I've never been to London, so I've never been to the one in London. I've been to the one in New York, the new one. I've been to the second one. I've been to the first one. But now I think they're requiring that you make an appointment to actually visit in store. Do you know about this?
Yeah. You have to. The only reason that I got in was I was like, hey, my wife like went in, she wanted to buy a beanie. And so she was like, they were like, yeah, it's gonna be 15 minutes. And my wife's like very pregnant at the time. She's like, oh yeah, like, don't worry about it, I'm fine. And they're like, oh, well, you're pregnant, you can just go in. And so then I went in like with my son and like the stroller. And I was like, hey, my wife who's pregnant's in there. And they're like, oh yeah, come on in. But like that's the only reason. Otherwise you have to like take a little thing with your phone. And it's like, it's not worth it that much for me to like have to wait. So.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at, is that, I mean, nice that the kids came in for that play. Yep, that was a good play.
Thank you, the kids.
Good play. Thank you, kids. But yeah, I mean, there are so many instances when I'm walking by and so I'm like, damn, I would love to just pop in, honestly, just check it out. But then I'm like, do I have to wait like 10 minutes, 15 minutes? I know there's no line out here, but like the scheduling of things, like, I don't know. I need to talk to someone about that. I need to have an all access pass.
I mean, it is, you know, it's how like the Supreme store was like on Lafayette back in the day when, you know, they have a new drop. Like the lines were insane, man, for anything they did.
True. Very, very true.
Yeah.
Clayton, man, it's been a wonderful conversation. We've gone for a bit here, and I think I want to chop it up with two last questions. One question that hopefully will provide value for the audience, and then one more about understanding you, and maybe a question that will provide value for you. So let's do it. You know, we've talked about how one of the biggest reasons why you created Spreza, or you know, you have these three pillars for Spreza: education, I can't remember the other one, so it's fine, but I want to ask you what advice you would give to someone who is new to fashion, who is new to trying to navigate the fashion landscape right now. Like, how would you inform them or tell them to engage in the fashion world based on what you've seen over the last 5-10 years?
More tangibly, I would say just try shit and fail. Like, if you really want to like hone good style and like understand what good style means for yourself, wear stuff and try things and mess up and refine it and get better. Study, I would say, probably more on the abstract side or more on like the philosophical side, like study people who have good style, study people who have written books about good style. Jason Jules is obviously a great example of that with the Black Ivy stuff. W. David Mark stuff with Amatora and like the history of education around Ivy style connected to Japan. David Coggins wrote about men in style to the perspective of stylish people and like how their fathers influence the way that they wear things now. I think like spending less time in like the discovery feed and the algorithms of like seeing what trendy shit people are wearing and more time reading books and studying stuff or listening to podcasts, or whatever it is. Those are the things that I think will help like give you more context for your own personal style. And that's stuff that's helped me over time, right? Because I think what it does when you spend less time on the social front of like digesting people who like dress trendy or have good, bits of style, but still feels trendy, like it puts you in this sort of like transactional mindset that you need to almost like transaction your way to buying a uniform so that you like fit in, as opposed to like connecting more to style from a human element of like what's come before, as a way of helping you inform the way that you want to dress and what you feel most comfortable in. And so that's what I would say.
Love that. Love that. Love that. Love that. Last question I want to ask you, man. Man, can you hear this truck beeping
bit,
right
man,
now?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
podcast
the killer.
Nightmare, man.
All right. Stopped. Okay. That's fine. We'll keep that in for authenticity. Last question here, man. What are you most looking forward to in 2024 for Spreza? I know you had the in-person event in New York. Do you plan to do more of that? What are you looking forward to for the newsletter, for what you got?
Yeah, I think the next evolution of Spreza is going from just being purely a newsletter into being more like an all-encompassing platform and being in different places, right? So online, I'm looking at what it would look like to potentially have like a commerce or like retail component to Spreza, where I curate brands that I really like and products that I, that I personally wear and love. So working on that. From a social perspective, like my Instagram has started to really take off last couple of months, and that's been really cool to see. I would hope to potentially get to like 100K by the end of the year, which would be sick. Which again, just like helps increase the reach of the stuff I talk about. So just trying to invest more in good content through social as a way of like top of funneling my people into ultimately the newsletter. And then the in-person shit, I've got a handful of events that I'm working on right now. Couple that will probably be in New York a little bit later in the year. So bookmark on your calendar, Drew, with that pen and paper.
Yes.
And then the one that's big right now that I'm working on is I'm going to do a pop-up shop in London for round two. So New York was round one. And yeah, this October is going to be round two. And I really wanted to do it in London because outside of like New York or LA or, that kind of stuff, like London is my biggest like market for like where people read from, the UK in general. And so got just a ton of people who follow and read along there and have a lot of great relationships with brands and people in the creative and fashion space. So I want to do a pop-up shop there, and it'll just be a curation of good independent brands, but we'll try to have some kind of activations with bigger ones too. So that's something I'm really, really fucking excited about, because I think it's going to be, I don't know, like the in-person stuff for me is like the whole reason that I do this. Like I love creating the thing and facilitating the experience and then just like bringing all the people in together. So that's what I'm looking forward to right now, man.
Clayton Chambers, ladies and gentlemen, it was a pleasure having you on the podcast. Last words, give us the socials, the newsletter, the everything so people can hear it. I'll also add it, but tell them.
Yep. Website right now is spreza.xyz. So that's spreza.xyz. And the IG account is spr.ezza. Got to grab whatever handle you can get at this point. So just random dots and at signs and numbers.
Who's got the Spreza IG?
Somebody,
man. We need to find this
Someone
person.
Someone sent me the other day, like, Clayton Chambers, like the person who owns Clayton Chambers on Instagram. And I was like, oh man, people probably looking for me like that. I've been like,
someone's got Drew Joyner too.
Yeah. It's the nature of jumping on late. But yeah, that's where you can find me. Yeah. So thanks for having me, bro. This was an honor, and I will return the favor with a fun editorial feature incoming from New York, not Denver.
Oh, no need.
for all the people soon, man. Because I mean, a lot of people in my community are huge, huge fans of your style and the way you talk about content and clothing and fashion as well. So it'll be fun to put some visual stuff to that.
I'm honored, man. I'm honored. I'm in Denver right now, back
home.
Oh, shoot. But
okay.
I'll be back in New York
yep.
soon.
All right, man.
So, we'll get up on that and wish you only the best. Enjoy this beautiful. I don't know how is it nice out there in Nashville right now? Is it a nice day?
Beautiful day. Yeah, low 60s. So
beautiful day.
Super nice.
Take the kids for a
yep.
walk.
Hit the park.
Yeah, something like that. I don't
Who
know.
Doesn't know.
I don't
Who
know what
know?
Parents be doing.